welcome to another Writer's Bookshelf podcast from myself, David Driver, brought to you by the Gingerlicious Company. Once again, hello to everyone. If you are in England, Scotland, Ireland, Wales, across the pond in America, in the mighty city of Prague, you may well be in the good old US of A, in Virginia. We've had a few more downloads there. And it's another short story. I think you are enjoying all these lovely short stories. They are available if you want to buy the full anthology. And I will say something more about that at the end of the show, if I remember. Okay, this one is taken from a collection going by the title of The Weird, Wonderful, Unique and Unusual Lives of Everyday People, and it goes by the title of Yellow Shoes. A little bit of language in this one, so it's just the way it is if you don't like that sort of thing. Cover your ears up now. It's not much, but it has got the F word in it. See what you think. Yellow Shoes. Kim quickened her pace. She could hear her every step and see her breath as she changed from a brisk walk to a steady jog. Someone followed her. "Where's a fucking taxi when you need one?" Kim spoke out loud. She called herself a daft bitch for not wanting to break into her last 20 quid and decided to walk home instead. Cutting left, she left the high street and ran along an alley. Something scurried behind the bins, disturbing a collection of cardboard. She wasn't bothered if it was rats, cats, or an urban fox. Kim hit the high street once more, only to cross it and continue down another shortcut. She knew if she reached the end, she could breathe a sigh of relief. A row of takeaways and an all-night cafe awaited her. As the 200-yard distance began, Kim saw people as she took half a dozen steps or so, and then disappeared. Two figures stopped, a couple. They kissed, a cigarette was lit, and shared. They moved to the left, out of sight, but the smoke was exhaled into the view of the nearing female running. Kim viewed the six large metal bins, three to either side of her, as the finish line. "Past these," she thought, "and I'm safe." As she came level with the first two, a large muscular figure appeared and something sharp pierced her stomach. She tried to cry out, but no words escaped. Her lungs emptied and breathing became difficult. Kim's eyes slowly closed. She couldn't see the face of her attacker, but a satisfied smile spread from ear to ear just before she slumped to the floor. Kim Spencer, 25, been out with her mates and looked like she decided to walk home by herself. Lives with her mother. We've got a team over there now with her. Split up with her boyfriend about 6 weeks ago, but he's currently in Amsterdam. "Good work, Yates." D.I. Burns spoke to his DS, then turned to his forensic team with eyes that wanted answers. "Cause of death is definitely stab wounds to the stomach, causing massive bleeding, and the throat's been cut. The position of the body and the blood patterns strongly suggest the throat was cut after she died. No signs of a struggle, no intercourse with the victim, no fingerprints on the victim, only fibres from a black woolen jumper." Okay. "Call me if you find anything else. Yates, Governor, get round the bars and clubs from last night and see what you can find. Right away. Her best friend's down at the station. Call me there with any developments." The morning air was clean and fresh. An exciting day lay ahead for Claire Green as she set off to catch the mid-morning train to Glasgow, where she'd catch up with a bunch of old school friends she hadn't seen in over 17 years. Large, jolly older man gave her the ticket along with a little conversation about the weather. He gave a more detailed conversation about 50 minutes later to the police when Claire Green was found stabbed to death in the ladies. Heated conversation also took place with regard to the broken CCTV and who was responsible. Even further conversation took place, complaints this time, when the station was closed to the public, as it was now a crime scene and the passengers were ferried down to the next station by bus. There has to be a connection other than the shoes, but what is it, Yates? Just what is it? I wish I knew. Seems a bit extreme to kill people just for their shoes. There doesn't seem to be a connection with the victims. Kim Spencer, 25, very attractive and popular. Claire Green, 37, plain, university type, career in the medical profession, no long-term boyfriend, and now this. As Burns and Yates spoke, they both looked down at the third victim. Lynn Dixon, 53, been out with friends on an 80s night out and never made it home. The towns and cities are not what they used to be, are they, Haiti? Old Mr. Christofferson spoke gently as he read his newspaper. Gangs on the streets, break-ins, empty shops or takeaways, pound shops, and now this. He pointed at the print. These murders, and the police are no nearer. Mrs. Simpson was saying the poor victims had no shoes when they were found. I wonder. He put the paper down and went over to the window. Frowning, he shook his head as he stared at the second-hand shop over the road. The newcomers had rented the premises for the past 9 months. They came and went at all hours, sold anything they could lay their hands on, and had recently started selling a variety of knives and legal highs. His family had owned the shop and flat above since 1905, when his grandfather had bought it. Mr. Christofferson was of Norwegian descent, and the family had always been in the antique business. They tended to deal with the more unusual and unique items. He retired to bed at 10:30 p.m. and was up again and having breakfast at 6:15 a.m. The man in his 70s saw all he needed to see across the road with the aid of his father's binoculars from the Second World War. Finishing his tea and toast, the antique dealer went about his business for the day and at 4:45 p.m. locked up his own premises and took the short walk over the road to speak with the newcomers. On entering, he dropped the latch on the door and smiled at the woman behind the counter. "What the fucking hell do you think you're doing, you silly old bastard?" she asked in an aggressive manner. "Please, madam, allow me to speak." "Speak? Fucking speak? I'll give you speak. Get my door open now. Mick, quick, get in here. We've got a right old knobhead. He's off his head. Get in here, quick." From the back storeroom, a barrel-chested man in his 20s appeared. He wore a black woolen jumper. He glared at Mr. Christofferson, then at the door, and finally at his mum. His fists were clenched, and not much was going on between his ears. Mick was like a wild dog, just waiting for its master to give the word. "I know what you've been up to," said the old man calmly, "and it stops today. You're evil, both of you. What are you on? Are you mental?" the mother laughed. At that moment, she gave her son the nod. Leaping over the counter, he came at Mr. Christofferson. Not flinching, the old man raised his walking stick A second before Mick's huge fist smashed into the antique dealer's face, he froze, flying backwards, smashing into the wall, bones cracked, and he lay unconscious. The woman produced a handgun, but the old man just smiled and waved at his missing finger. She let out a gasp of pain as the weapon branded her hand due to a sudden rush of intense heat fused into the metal. Killing is wrong. Messing with black magic is wrong. And trying to curse objects and sell them is wrong. The woman held a burnt hand and cowered as she listened to the man with Scandinavian ancestors. He continued, "You sold the yellow shoes and got your son to kill the woman who bought them. Then you took them back and she lay dead and put them back in your shop window and waited for another sale and kill. What did you expect to achieve? You know nothing of the fight between good and evil." Mr. Christofferson produced two copper boxes from his jacket pocket. The foul-mouthed woman tried to protest as her very life was sucked away from her. When she no longer breathed, he closed the lid. He also closed the lid of the second box as the facial expressions of Mick now wore said that the necessary work had been done. "I don't know what this city's coming to yet." "Me neither, Gov. But what's this all about?" Burns pointed at the two victims. They looked like a couple of inhabitants from the Galapagos Islands. How and who could do this to a person? "It beats me. Me too, Yates. Me too. We've had three women murdered and found with no shoes. And then this happens. A mother and son running a crappy second-hand shop. Murdered. And for what? No sign of a break-in. No money taken. They haven't even bothered to grab a few crappy CD players or cheap DVDs and flog them in some of our lovely British boozers for a few pints. I mean, they've even a load of illegal drugs sitting untouched. It just doesn't make sense." "You can say that again, Yates. I mean, what did these two ever do to deserve this?" In a quiet part of Norway, an old lady became very excited when she received a parcel from England. She recognised the handwriting straight away and opened it immediately. Shaking her head with disapproval, she stood, left the house, and took a brisk 15-minute walk up the mountainside behind her home. Stopping at the mouth of a cave, she entered and walked down the spiralling ice path. It led to a magnificent ice chamber, where shelves had been carefully carved into the spectacular sheets of frozen water. She removed two copper boxes from the inside pocket of her fur coat and placed them on one of the shelves labelled "Murderers." A man appeared dressed in white furs. His skin was the colour of snow and his eyes as blue as the clearest sky. "A gift from Mr. Christofferson," the woman said. The man nodded with approval and both went their separate ways. On the afternoon, just before Mr. Christofferson had paid a visit to Mick and his mother, the son had been ordered to get rid of the yellow shoes. He had driven to a local council tip and thrown them into a skip. The skip was full of shoes, all bound for another country. A country which had recently suffered the devastation of a hurricane and was pleased to receive aid from around the world. The local police had their work cut out with recent events and were stretched even further when they found a young woman murdered outside a bar who was wearing yellow shoes. Some people took advantage of the situation with the police and theft spread like wildfire. A second murder victim was found 3 days later. She was also wearing yellow shoes. Well, I do hope that you like that one, and I think I think I'm going to share another one with you now. Just bear with me, because I'm going to share a second story called Lamplight Man. And possibly, yeah, well, there's a little bit of language in this one, but it does fit in. Okay, Lamplight Man. See if you like this one. The black BMW came to a sudden screeching halt and the engine turned off abruptly. But the song continued to play due to the fact that the key remained in the ignition. It was soothing and reminded the driver of happier times. As the song faded, the key was quickly removed to avoid the DJ's voice pulling the listener from the moment. On the passenger seat sat a mobile phone. It was checked, tossed back onto the seat, and then checked again. Not a single missed call or text. The window was lowered a little, and the night air was fresh and relaxing. Bastard! Sophie spoke. Bastard! 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 She checked her mobile phone once more, considered turning the radio back on for a couple of seconds, and decided on jumping out of the car and slamming the door shut as hard as she could. Oh, you bastard! You fucking bastard! You wanker! Indecisively, she paced up and down, deciding what her next move would be. Lights flashed on the car as she unlocked it, then flashed again when it was locked. Pondering over the mobile phone for about 10 seconds, it shattered over the tarmac when it landed about 20 feet away from the car. Sophie took in several deep breaths and calmed down a little. She looked out across the city down below. It was late, but lights spread for miles. Cars could be seen travelling in all directions, and a couple of planes could be spotted in the sky as they left the airport. All of a sudden, Sophie felt calm, and she felt very calm indeed. It wasn't a cold night, even though it was late, but it was so peaceful. Grass lay to either side of the road, and an odd young tree had been planted here and there. The road continued for about 2 miles with a small wood to the left and a short rubble track to the right, which led to a rock face of sandstone. And from here, the road descended sharply back down into the city. A dual carriageway ran for about a mile, and at the third roundabout, a sharp right could be taken, which led back to where she stood. The ascent was at such a gradient and twisted in such a way that it didn't allow a driver to get out of third gear. But Sophie hadn't managed to get out of third several times. As she completed the circuit several times, she floored it and not considered the consequences. Most of all, the fact that she'd drunk nearly 2 bottles of red wine. Unbelievably, no other vehicles had been on the road and no police car had stopped her. Wanker! She wasn't peaceful anymore. Bastard wanker! Sophie thought about what had happened, what she had found out. She thought about Gino. How could he have done that to her? And how could her friends let her down like that? Sophie remembered the first time she set eyes on Gino and how she'd fallen in love with him. Look at me, she thought. That plain, ugly duckling. From that plain, boring Scottish village, all grown up. Drop-dead gorgeous, figure, sports car, luxury apartment, qualifying journalist, writer, working for a well-known newspaper, and an army of male admirers. Gino had plenty of female attention, and rightly so. He was a flirty Italian cockney, a successful entrepreneur with a chain of cafes. He'd had plenty of relationships in the past, but he and Sophie just connected from the start. Holidays have been shared all over the world, along with weekend breaks in Wales and Cornwall. Both sets of parents got on like a house on fire, and Sophie's grandma, Mary, had a really special relationship with Gino. Bastard. You fucking bastard, Sophie screamed. Past events flashed through her mind. The restaurant she'd booked to celebrate the official engagement. The music, the food, the dancing, all the cards. And then Alfonso turns up. Gino's lifelong friend and 20 years his senior. But not all jaws hit the floor like hers when they both announced that they were two homosexual men in love. One of the so-called best friends actually knew and had told other ones about the news. The icing on the cake came when Priya, the young Indian girl who everybody knew from the takeaway and had been asked to work a couple of nights at the restaurant to cover illness, announced that she'd enjoyed a one-night stand with Gino. He didn't deny it, and he had said that he had to be sure of his sexuality. Alfonso flung his arms around Gino and said it was an act of true love towards him. Sophie could feel herself boiling up and over and fought against it. This place was so calm. This was when she noticed the street lamp with the bench sat snugly underneath. With surprised excitement, she calmly walked towards the bench, plonking herself on the varnished everyday piece of wood. A cosy, warm feeling engulfed her. It was as if she was safe within her own bubble of tranquility. She held her arms out straight and then put them back at the side several times. The same procedure was done with her legs. And Sophie giggled and looked up at the lamp. Laughing, she reached back with her arm and patted it like a pet. She'd never felt like this before. Jumping to her feet, Sophie unexpectedly did several star jumps and then stood still with her arms outstretched to the sides. She spun round and round, faster and faster, singing her favourite song, and then fell to the floor in a dizzy heap. And this sensation caused her to roll out of the lamplight, and then she didn't feel so happy. Rolling herself back in, she felt good once more. Sophie stood and looked at the lamp more closely. It looked just like any other ordinary lamp. And this time she walked out of the light, counted to 10, and then walked back into the light. Her mood was much happier in the light. Stepping out once more, she walked around the bench and noticed that the orange lamplight formed a sphere. Sophie walked a little further away and looked back. The sphere was still there. She looked at her car, half smiled, when she realised she couldn't ring for a taxi and quickly returned to the bench, sitting down. He appeared from nowhere, right before her very eyes, and she didn't feel threatened at all. A man of average height and build, complete with a bowler hat and walking stick, performed a little tap dance whilst humming a tune. When the routine was finished, he produced an apple and juggled it along with the bowler hat and walking stick. After a minute, the hat landed on his head, the walking stick was caught in one hand and the apple in the other. "Good evening," he said. I'm the lamplight man." After which he took a bite of the red fruit. "Good evening," Sophie replied. "It's a lovely night, don't you think?" Another bite of the apple was taken. "Lovely. I guess you're not feeling so good at the moment. Are you, Sophie? How did you know my name? What with Gino wanting to be with Alfonso? Shame. Who are you?" And that Indian girl. What a slut. "I'm glad I haven't got friends like yours. They keep secrets from you. How do you know all this?" Sophie became tense, nerves took over, and the whole atmosphere changed. Swallowing, her heart beat. thumped inside her head and her throat was dry. The lamplight man moved spider-like. He stared, but she could not see his face. Whispering her name, the stranger walked around the bench. Sophie stood, shifting her weight from one foot to the other. Clenching both fists, she followed his every move. Arching her back in pain, she let out a cry of pain as the crack of the whip followed. Another lash came, then another. Falling to her knees, she tried to touch her back with a hand. Something invisible grabbed her, pulling her back to her feet. Her blouse was ripped, baring her back. Sophie suddenly found herself being quickly marched towards the lamppost, where her head was smashed against it. Warm blood trickled down her face, dripping to the floor. Her arms were raised above her head and secured. Wait, I have another game in mind for this one to play. As Sophie raised her head, she could see the lamplight man nearing. Sophie felt the cold hands touching her once more. Blood ran from her lips, where she bit hard with fear. She was now naked and tied with her back against a concrete pillar. Although they had not shown themselves, she could sense that the cold evil that had stripped her had gone. She began to cry as a captor slowly approached. Luck be a lady tonight. Luck be a lady tonight. Ta 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 ta. The lamplight man clicked his fingers while singing a little tune. Sophie kicked out as only her hands were bound. His face still wasn't visible, but he removed his hat, raised his head high, and thrust it right down before her own. Her eyes were flooded with tears. She trembled with fear. She couldn't scream or shout as her mouth was so dry. Breathing rapidly, a cold sweat covered her body. Vomiting, Sophie began to shake. His face was pure evil and hate, burning with nothing more than a malevolent intent. His hands touched her breasts, then moved down to the piercing in her belly button. He savagely ripped it out, laughed, and threw it to the ground. Pointing the walking stick at her, a blade appeared from the tip. Slicing down her thigh, the cold steel caused Sophie to wince. The weapon was pointed at her eyes, and she quickly shut them tight. It was slowly drawn across her cheek, under her chin, and across her throat, continuing down her cleavage. The torture didn't end until it drew blood down her ribcage. Sophie's necklace, earrings, and nose piercing were all torn away and discarded. Her hands were freed and she dropped to the floor. Her flesh felt as if it were burning and peeling away from her bones. Vision blurred as she tried to stand, but Sophie was being dragged backwards into the concrete of the lamp post. Fingers desperately clawed at the post, ripping away her nails. She felt like she was being hauled over red hot coals. No, she finally found her voice. Legs, arms and upper torso all vanished, leaving only her head. As the pain pounded in her skull, the last picture her blue eyes were allowed to view was a lamplight man performing a waltz with his walking stick, and then she was gone forever. April the 29th, Saturday, 8:58 a.m, a mobile phone rang. Morning, sir. Radcliffe. Sorry to disturb you, sir, but it can't wait. Go on. We have a missing person last night. Sometime between 11:30 and 5. A missing person? Yes, sir. A missing young woman. But I think we could have a possible serial killer. A serial killer? Yes, sir. It's identical to the last one. The last one? On Moorhill Road, sir, last year. by the bench. My first case, remember? Go on, Radcliffe. Sophie Layton, 28, from Scotland. She'd been living down here for the last 9 months and works for one of the big newspapers. Last seen leaving the Bowler Hat restaurant about 11 last night after rowing with her boyfriend. All the clothes are bloodstained, like before, sir, and scattered along with the jewellery. We have no body, but there's a half-eaten red apple and blood smears all up the lamppost. I wouldn't have phoned, sir, if it wasn't so exact. Even the date, sir. Good God, Ratcliffe. It's uncanny. It's identical. You did the right thing in calling. Who's on the team? Trent, Collins and Golding. Excellent choice. I'll join you within the hour. No, make it two, Radcliffe. I'll have to inform Mrs. Baxter that our wedding anniversary, break to Cornwall, will have to be postponed for a second year in a row. Oh, goodness me. So those were two short stories written by myself. I do hope that you enjoyed them. A little bit of language in there. And I do hope you've enjoyed this episode of The Writer's Bookshelf. If you want to be a guest on the show, if you want to pop into the studio and have a chat with me and get your voice, get your writer's voice out there on the podcast circuit, come and have a chat with me, a tea, a coffee. You might even bring some chocolate biscuits, you never know. If you live a little bit further afield, let me know and I can do a travelling bookshelf, meaning I can meet up with you at a place of your choice and we can have a chat. Or if you want to send me some of your work and I will gladly read it out. Just get in touch if you are weaving your wonderful words of magic. And if you want to find out a little bit more about me, get yourself to the website, and that is daviddriverauthor.com, and of course www. Thank you for listening, and I will obviously be speaking to you on the next episode. Goodbye for now.